I'm supposed to be the tech guy here. Full screen. Let's see here. Play and then F5. Let's see. So F5 now. F11 maybe?
You're good on the big screen.
Oh, okay.
A little focused. Let's see if this works out.
Alright, good.
Well, good morning. I don't know how many of you have heard the... I don't know if it's a meme or what, but we finally got through the year of January. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's been a slog. It feels like our family, we've been dealing with, a lot of us have, but for us, seasonal flu. For me, it feels like it's messed with my body and my mind, so I could use your help this morning. There'll probably be time afterward for comment. But that said, that has caused me to lean on God more too, and given a certain angle to my studies, which I'm grateful for. So we'll be looking at it from that perspective. I thought we'd go through, and we'll see how well the slideshow works too, but a brief recap here. We're going through Genesis. And Genesis starts out with creation, and then you've got this things come to a head there in the garden, and there's some promises made, and some predictions, and some curses, and things that happen. And you've got the seed of Satan and the seed of the woman, and some things are set in motion there. And I really appreciated the selection of songs this morning, standing on the promises. I've been with my daughter's encouragement, reading through the Bible starting in January this year. And for me, one of the encouragements has been, and we'll go through this a little later toward the end, but seeing how God, through his mercy and his faithfulness, uses men, flawed, sinful man, to accomplish his purposes. For me, that's a great encouragement, because day-to-day living, and we see the struggles that these different Abraham and Sarah and these different ones went through, God still accomplished his purposes through their life. That's a great encouragement to me, because in the end, he is faithful who promised. And we see I've been marking promises and fulfillments as I go through too with my highlighter, and there's a lot of promises made in the scripture. Those are there for us to lean on, and faith is, if we can't see the evidence of the faith yet, it's the believing in what we can't see that pleases God, and we see that in the lives of these men. And not to get ahead, but I've been reading through, because I'm in Leviticus now, but I've seen the life of Abraham and Joseph and these different men who... They lived faithful to God. Many times it's painful. Joseph's in the prison a couple years, and he's faithful to God, and God is glorified through it, and the plan of God is forwarded through that, and then he dies. And yet the promises of God move on. So I'm grateful today for the way God works with us, his people. And I'm very glad for that. Well, like I said, we'll wrap up with a brief kind of look at some of that in the New Testament too. But a recap here, we've got Abram in Genesis 11, born, married, no child, moved to Haran, I'm not sure how you say it. Next chapter 12, Abraham is now 75 years old, moves to Egypt through Canaan. And you've got this beginning, and Abram refers to this later in the chapter we'll look through in 20. He tells Abimelech that Sarah and I agreed, and he approaches Sarah. This is the kindness that you're going to show to me. It's a bit of a request he makes to her, and we see Sarah's got, she thinks on her own through these scriptures. She's not just, we see the testimony in the New Testament of her calling Abraham Lord, but she's got her own opinions about things. And so one of the things we see here is that Abram tells Abimelech, we agreed early on that would say that she's my sister. We see that happen here in the Pharaoh in Genesis 12. When Pharaoh's house is plagued, and that story unfolds. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail in here. Genesis 13 through 15, Sarai is not mentioned in this section, but Abraham receives this promise. And one thing I noticed is that in that particular iteration or putting forth of the promise, Sarai is not mentioned there. She is in chapters 17 and 18. But I kind of process that through how I think of Abraham, because Ishmael is the flesh. We're told that in the New Testament. There's the flesh and then there's the promise, which is Isaac. And I often thought, well, Abraham, and maybe this is, we're not told everything about the story, but I often would think, well, Abraham knew it was going to come through Sarah, but he wanted to accomplish God's promise through his own means. And I'm kind of rethinking some of that. And we are told that the promise came through, come through Isaac. He was a child of the promise. There's no doubt about that. And yet, I'm kind of trying to live through Abram's experience there and his efforts and Sarah and all that. And maybe they thought that was a legitimate path. Let Ishmael, let him walk before you. No, it's going to be through Isaac. So God is dealing with man here, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on that later. But he wasn't told it'd be through Sarah at that point. It was later on. And to me, that was new. I hadn't noticed that before. So Genesis 13 through 15, he's promised the heir. And he believes God, and it's accounted to him for righteousness. And that becomes a big theological foundation in the New Testament, in Romans 4, father of our faith, and things like that. It's a very important thing. That it were also a very important thing is that this happened before circumcision, that this believing God in 15, circumcision not introduced until later. And Paul builds on that quite a bit in the New Testament. Abraham believed God. Let us believe God, his promises. That's really what God is looking for, is men who will, and women who will believe what he says. Genesis 16, we're told here, Abraham hearkens to Sarai's voice and has a child by Hagar at 86. And we know that Sarai is 10 years younger than Abraham, so she's 76. But he listens to her, hearkens to her voice, and has a child by Hagar. So I don't know we're not told what kind of conversations Abraham and Sarah had. I'm pretty sure that their marriage was to the point where he would have told her about the promise, and that maybe that was her motivation. Look, we're not having kids. I can't, I'm barren. Let's just do this a different way. I don't know. We're not told all the motives behind it, but we do know that he hearkened to her voice, and that happens again. We'll see in this later section. Continuing the recap. Sorry if that's kind of small. Genesis 17. Abraham's now 99. He's renamed to Abraham. Sarai is renamed to Sarah. We're told that she's 10 years younger. This is where circumcision is introduced. And we're living on the eighth day, and then all the ones of your house and anybody you own, if anybody refuses to get circumcised, then they are cast out. Abraham and Ishmael. Abraham obeys God, and there's circumcision. And it's interesting, the phrases in there. It's little things I noticed. Sorry, I'm just kind of giving you things that jumped out for the first time. My covenant will be in your flesh. Interesting phrase. That God, the way he works and how he gives us things that sometimes are tangible. We have the table that we eat. The bread and the wine is a tangible thing that God gave us. This is where in 17 Abraham finds out, it's going to be through Sarah. That is the promise will come through Sarah. And who laughs first? This is nothing else I thought. I thought, well, he's called Isaac because Sarah laughed. Well, that's Abraham laughed first. He's the one who laughed. And there was some doubt. Shall I have pleasure? I forget the exact wording there, but there's some doubt conveyed there in Genesis 17. Abraham laughs. And then in 18, Abraham is visited by three men. Meal's prepared. Where is Sarah? She's on the other side of the door. She overhears this and she laughs within herself. And then she's asked later, did you laugh? And she's afraid. No, I didn't laugh. Yeah, thou didst laugh. But then she laughs later, we see in chapter 21, for joy. And so there's a lot of laughter, and Isaac, your name means laughter. So you go ahead and laugh. Life is good. God's promises are good. And then in 18 here, we've got the three men, two of them go forth to Sodom. One of them, I think, is to the Lord there, and is interceding, I think, is face-to-face. Intercedes for Sodom at 18. 19, we've got Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed, and then we've got Lot's daughters, what they did with their dad. So let's... I think I'll read through and just give you the intro first here for each section. It's like four sections. Genesis 20, 1 through 8, some things to look for as we read through here. Abimelech heard Sarah was his sister and took her. And this was Abimelech, actually, the situation here. We see 75 years later, I think it's the same Abimelech. I think here he's younger and later on he's older. In this situation, Abimelech is the one who would have touched her had God allowed it. And we see later on in Genesis, I think it's 26, with Isaac and Rebekah, that it's the men of the city, I think, that were taking Rebekah, and Abimelech saw through the window. So he was a lot older then. That's how I'm reading it, at least. Abimelech called, not Abraham, but I didn't spell this out, he acknowledged God, Lord. And he was a God-fearing, yet a righteous nation. He had integrity. God acknowledged that. He acted quickly after these dreams he had. The next morning he woke up and acted quickly, and the men were filled with fear. They acknowledged that there was God protecting them from a great sin, and the men feared God. So let's read Genesis 20, 1 through 8. Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, thou art but a dead man, and the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. God took this marriage seriously, the marriage covenant seriously. But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, she is my sister? And she, even she herself, said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this. And God said unto him in a dream, yea, I know, God speaking, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart. For I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore I suffered I thee not to touch her. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee. We see that later in verse 17. He shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. Therefore Abimelech rose early in the morning, and called all his servants, and told all these things in their ears, and the men were sore afraid. God takes marriage seriously. Genesis 20, the next section, 9 through 18. Here we see both Abraham and Sarah rebuked. In the King James, the word for Sarah there is reproved. And so I'm seeing there that she was involved. And again, this is an agreement that what I'm seeing in the scripture, that they came to together, Abraham and Sarah. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? And what have I offended thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. Abimelech said unto Abraham, what sawest thou, that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place. He was wrong about that. And that they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed, she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, back in chapter 12, that I said unto her, this is the kindness which thou shalt show unto me. At every place whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother. And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and woman servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before thee. Dwell where it pleases thee. And unto Sarah he said, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes, and unto all that are with thee, and with all other thus she was reproved. If you have any insight on verse 16, I'd like to hear that. Covering the eyes, I've been looking at it too much. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Chapter 21. First 8 verses, we have Isaac born. And circumcised and weaned. Abraham honored God and his commands with the circumcision. This is the fulfillment of many years of waiting. And God making good on his promise to Abraham and Sarah now, with them bearing a son of promise. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. There are things that we're waiting for, promises. There's prophecies yet to be fulfilled for the church, for Israel, and God will be faithful to fulfill those. And Abraham called, verse 2, for Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. That's joy. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. It's a great fulfillment of a promise there. Next section, 9 through 21. This is Hagar and Ishmael being cast out. And we see here Sarah. This is Sarah's idea. And Abraham hearkens to her voice. Now the interesting thing here, just going through the notes here, sorry. Ishmael is roughly 14. He was circumcised at 13, we know that. He's roughly 14. Sarah's idea was to cast him out. The son was mocking, and Sarah said, cast out the bondwoman. She's quoted in the New Testament there. Abraham's grieved for his son Ishmael, but God tells Abraham to hearken to Sarah's voice. We'll see that going through here. And another thing I thought was interesting is Ishmael, I don't know if it's significant, but he's not mentioned by name in this whole section. The last time he's mentioned was the circumcision. The next time is much later in Genesis when he's, I believe, burying Abraham along with Isaac. But in this section, even though it's significant, he's only called lad, child, and son. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman, in all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of this bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Remember, as we go through this, that Ishmael is 14 years old. I tend to picture a little baby because of the way she puts him under a shrub and this kind of thing. But he's 14. And the water, verse 15, was spent in the bottle, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. And she went and sat down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. For she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lift up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven, and said unto her, What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him in thine hand, for I will make him a great nation. And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle with water, and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness, and became an archer. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Haran, and his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. I think I'm not going to look at the rest of 21. I'm going to just to make sure that there's a few minutes left. I wanted to consider, as I mentioned at the beginning, God's mercy and faithfulness to three different people that we've seen so far in these last few chapters. Again, as we consider how God sees our faith, he knows we're but dust. He knows that this treasure is in these earthen vessels, and that brings him glory because of his strength is made perfect in our weakness. These kind of concepts, God has chosen this process that he can get the glory for any good that comes. God's testimony of Abraham, Romans 4, 13 to 22. I'd like to read that in light of the fact that Abraham did laugh and He did laugh and convey some doubt by asking questions. Shall I have pleasure? Can this really happen? These kind of things. And you look what God's testimony is of Abraham. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void and the promise made of none effect. Because the law worketh wrath. Where no law is, there is no transgression. Therefore it is of faith that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed, not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations, before him whom he believed, even God, who quickeneth the dead, and calleth those things which be not as though they were, who against hope believed in hope, that he might become the father of many nations, according to that which was spoken, so shall thy seed be. And being not weak in faith, that's God's testimony of Abraham, being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead when he was about 100 years old, neither the deadness of Sarah's womb. He, Abraham, staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded that what he had promised, he, God, was able to perform, and therefore he was imputed to him for righteousness. What a beautiful testimony of Abraham, the father of us all, it says. The next individual I'd like to look at is Sarah, God's mercy and faithfulness to Sarah. There's a testimony of her in Hebrews 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful that promised. Even though she had laughed and expressed doubt and even lied out of fear there in Genesis 18, God's testimony is that she judged him faithful who had promised. And the last one, and this isn't part of the section we're covering today, but God's mercy and faithfulness to Lot. I think Corey had covered this in one of the Wednesday evening Bible studies a year or so ago. That in 2 Peter 2, I'd like to read that section, 2 Peter 2, 7 and 8. These things are great. They're great encouragements to me in a world, especially this one, in a world that is it's a dark, confusing world. Many times, the Prince of Darkness is active, and it can be discouraging if we focus on the flesh and the things around us, politics, other things like that. But God is faithful, and His Word is light in this dark world. 2 Peter 2. I'll read 6 through 9. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. That word vexed, we see it twice here in the next verse too. And maybe we can relate to this. Again, with all that's going on in the world, vexed means to be worn down, labored, and tormented. That was what vexed. He was living in this evil society around him. And look at who he was dealing with. The men outside the door, banging on his door, for unspeakable reasons. He was vexed in that city. He delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, here Lot's called righteous, that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Interesting in verse 9, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. I think the last verse I wanted to read was Mark 9:24. Again, this is we see the testimonies of Abraham and Sarah and Lot. God recognizes faith, even if it's a mustard seed. And the father of this child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. And mercy was extended that day. I won't go into Romans 9 this morning. I want to leave time for some feedback and other input. But thank you very much for going through this with us in Genesis. It's been a real encouragement to me. Lots of welcome.
Abraham did not have great faith himself. He had great faith in God. That is a little difference that stumbled me when I was in my teenage years, is that I was concerned that I didn't have enough faith to be saved. And that worried me a lot. For 3 years I had nightmares over it. And I kept having a reoccurring dream that I was in hell arguing with God why I shouldn't be there, but knowing that I wasn't saved. And it all came down to not enough faith, a weak faith. Well, the Lord saved me one night, going through Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, for by grace are you saved through faith, that not of yourself, the gift of God. And I realized for the first time that it was not my faith in my own faith. It was my faith that God would keep His promise. So I trusted my entire eternity to Him that night, and I knew I was saved. You'll notice in this chapter lapses of faith in Abraham. He was worried about his own life. He made that agreement with Sarah as an insurance that if he got into trouble because she was beautiful, and that some sinful man might want to take her, that to preserve his life, she would pretend to be, well, she was his sister. It was half truth, but not revealed that she was Abraham's wife. And so he went to the reasoning of the flesh to save his skin. And the carnal man is enmity against the Spirit of God. The carnal man cannot receive the things of God because of this enmity. And it's often that we struggle, all of us, with the carnal reasonings of a fallen nature. We'll suddenly think, oh, I'll do this. And maybe for the preservation of himself, ourself, or in the case of Ishmael and Hagar, and Sarah began to reason in the flesh, well, I'm now 75, 76 years old, I'm way past the age, I need to help God with this promise, because the promise was already given in chapter 18, that it would be through Sarah. So Sarah's reasoning, maybe if Hagar has this child to my husband upon my knees, that it will be my blessing. There was that reasoning in the Old Testament times. And so she's going to help God. And the reasoning of the flesh, it makes so much sense. And even Abraham went along with this. But God was going to do a miracle. The spirit and the carnal mind, they just can't reconcile these things. The walk of faith, the life of faith, doesn't make sense sometimes. And as they got older and older and older, the promise of God didn't make sense. And so they jumped in. And do we do that? I suggest that we do. That's our tendency. Well, when the announcement came and then the fulfillment came, there was laughter. You brought that up very well, brother. There was laughter. And the Lord, the angel of the Lord said, Sarah, why did you laugh? Why did you laugh? Why did she laugh? She was 99 years old. Could it be that a 99-year-old woman would have a child to fulfill the promise of God? And she laughed at the thought. So did Abraham. Human reasoning is entering in there. And that's why they laughed. And yet, you know, as you brought up, Abraham believed God in hope against hope. When hope seemed impossible, he hoped. And he trusted God. And do you know what is happening in this chapter? Is that God is using various means to grow people's faith. He grew the faith of Abraham. He grew the faith of Sarah. He grew the faith of Abimelech. By the way, I'm not so sure Abimelech had a righteous nation. I'm not so sure. I see there was a lot of conflict in chapter 21 where they were violently taking away the wells that Abraham had dug in verse 25. They were a violent people. They dwelt in the land of the Philistines. And I'm not so sure that without God's intervention, that when God said, Abimelech, you're a dead man, without that, I'm not so sure it would have gone so well for Abraham, because he didn't ask Abraham for Sarah. He took her. I don't think Abraham would have just, oh yeah, please, take her. I don't think so. That's just my thought. And, you know, we can debate that. That's all right. But at any rate, what I am saying, though, is that that day, Abimelech learned something about God. Do you know what was at stake? I'll wrap up here. Do you know what was at stake? If Abimelech took Sarah, and she conceived by Abimelech, or if he took her. Who is, and she was already bearing the child that God had promised by miraculous birth. She would have been called Abimelech's son, or this child would have been called Abimelech's son. And the promise of the miraculous birth, and the promise that in thy seed all the nations shall be blessed, would have been compromised. Do you see what I'm saying? The testimony would have been lost. That's what was at stake by this lapse of faith in Abraham, and by Abimelech's action of taking Sarah. And God intervened for the promise that he had made, the covenant that he had made, so that that would not be said of this child, that it was Abimelech's child. So the entire promise of God was going to be compromised, and God intervened. And through the process, he grew everybody's faith. So that's what God does. He does miracles, and then he instructs us in the walk of faith. That's what God is doing. All right, I'll be quiet. Somebody else can have the turn.
One of the things that I just see over and over again in these chapters is Abraham, who and Sarah are told in Hebrews. You know, obviously we see, like you said, the lapses of faith, but we see the highlight in the New Testament of they're characterized as people of faith. And yet when you read through here, you see him lying, you see him laughing, which in some regards that's makes me think of the story of Joseph, where man's imperfect motives and evil intentions perhaps are present, and yet the Lord still uses it for a good thing, because when it says in verse 6 of 20, chapter 21, that God has made me laugh, or God made laughter for me, it seems to be that God is turning that into something good. Like with Joseph, where he said, concerning his brothers, you know, that God used it for good. And so I think the response seems to be from the heart of Abraham and Sarah, like when God confronted them, they at least tried to submit and learn and grow in faith through those experiences. But it seems like Abraham has to keep learning the same lesson through different things, because you have him initially he tries to use the works of the flesh to help God accomplish his plan, which is not what we should do. God doesn't need our help. And it seems like he keeps doing that through these stories, but maybe to a lesser degree. And then finally, when Isaac does come, like you said, the long-awaited promise, it's like the climax of the story. Like, the promise is here. You mentioned that it's not mentioned, but Isaac is the seed until here, which is true. But why wouldn't Abraham have known that it shouldn't be through another woman?
Yeah.
Right.
So you assume your wife, right?
Right. So again, he used the works of his flesh, or even though he listened to Sarah, used the works of his flesh to try to accomplish, or help God accomplish God's plan, instead of just completely trusting the Lord. And so, we try to go to different parts of our life and say, well, maybe I should do this. And it's kind of sometimes difficult to know exactly where we should put our faith to action. And it comes down to trust, whether we're believing the Lord and trusting the Lord, or whether we're saying, well, I need to help God out with this because nothing's happening. And I think you put that well, and I'm encouraged to see that even though they had these failures, God came through. God, through the writer of Hebrews, complimented both of them on their faith. And then promise comes, the promised son comes, and he keeps teaching them. He keeps working with them to help them grow in that faith. I like that verse there. Help by my own belief, because we all are cut off that same cloth where we lack faith, but we have a great God. And the ultimate test of Abraham's faith is the next chapter.
And that phrase, help by my own belief, that's, even that is belief. He's turning to God for his weakness. You see that in the Psalms all the time. David, he brings his weakness, even his anger and his frustration. He turns to God, and that is faith. He goes to the source of his help. From whence comes my help? It comes from God. And even when things are not going well, it's when we turn to God. That is an expression. Lord, I help my unbelief. But that's the story, as is pointed out here. God is helping the unbelief of these people. That's so merciful.
Yeah, and I've heard that Ishmael is a picture of flesh, and Isaac is obviously a picture of Christ. And one interesting possible reason why he's not mentioned by name, he's usually mentioned as the man in his message. But Isaac, more often than not, is mentioned by name, and it's just the significance of it. But the Lord does point out, as you read through, he cares about Hagar and Ishmael, the people, you know, he cares for them, he cares about them. Says that he's going to make a great nation, but it's interesting to me that as the picture is shown to us, that dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife from the land of Egypt, which is a picture of the world. You know, you see little things here that just pictorially show us that Christ is the true better, as we say. That the works of the flesh are inferior by far.
This concept of how God views, or how God recorded and summed up Abraham and Sarah's life in the New Testament is important for us as well. Because what will God say about you? You know, if we were, not that we ever will be, but if your life was to be recorded in these pages, what would God say about you? And the encouraging thing is when you do come to Hebrews 11, some of those people in there had horrid failures. Like if they committed some of those sins within the church, they would have been given over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. I mean, these were serious offenses that they committed, and yet here they are in Hebrews 11 for their faith. And it's encouraging on so many fronts, because most importantly, the purposes of God are not thwarted because of man's sin. We see the rain in the garden, we see that. And also, for our daily walk, one thing we've been going through with the kids is your practice and your position. And I know that that's a simple concept, but it's not so simple to walk it. Because it's so easy to get into this mindset that if I read my Bible more, if I pray more, if I'm just a better little goody Christian, and God's going to somehow shine more favor on me, or love me more, or all these crazy things go through our mind, and it's paganism to me. Because, yes, there are consequences for sin, and this is not teaching that encourages you, well, I'm saved, so whatever. Grace doesn't do that, by the way. Who wrongs someone? Who writes them? It's not even logical. But it's so important for us to keep coming back to the place that we understand I am sealed with the Holy Spirit of promise. I am an heir. I am a co-heir with Christ. I'm going to rule and reign with him.
God has raised me up with him. I am seated with him in heavenly places. These are incredible truths that you and I thankfully had nothing to do with. And we can't undo it. And yet we have that position in him. Regardless of how we fall or how many times we fall. Because boy, we do. I don't know about you, but I get so frustrated with myself, and you can get so depressed and miserable when all you do is look at you and how awful you are, and I did this again, will I ever be free of this? That's a terrible road to go down. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And remembering these things because it's practical. We need this day to day to day. This isn't just some doctrine that we gather here or cram our head full and out the door we go. It's important to remember these things every day, where I stand with the Lord. And nothing's going to sever that relationship. And I get up. I don't give up, but I get up and I give it another go. Thank the Lord he gives us the strength and the ability to do these things. Very gracious.
Us to read and see your promises. We thank you for that. Thank you for
for your Spirit that as unbelievers you would teach us and guide us into truth. Thank you for your promises that were set in motion before the foundation of the world, expressed to these different ones throughout history. We see the humanity of them, and yet we see that your purposes have not been frustrated through the humanity and through the flesh, but your will is done. We are grateful that salvation has come to the world through the uncorrupted seed. Jesus came and walked a path of life for us and took the punishment for our sin. The punishment where it rose again to newness of life. All these things are available to us through faith, salvation. And we give thanks that this world gives light and hope. Thank you for all the ones here, and I pray that this next week, as we face different things that are dark or fleshly or discouraging or of the evil one, that we believe that your Son has overcome the world. And that truth will strengthen us through the week. We thank you for your word. And that is truth. In Christ's name.
At this point, they're trying to figure out what.